We are back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. There are more than 40 million victims of human trafficking around the world, according to statistics from the International Labor Organization. The group says a quarter are children and three quarters are women and girls. It's a multi-billion dollar industry that enriches the perpetrators through the sexual slavery of their victims.
Criminals often prey on vulnerable groups, such as immigrants or people living in poverty. But our next guest is proof that human trafficking occurs throughout all communities, and it's often hidden in plain sight. Teresa Flores was 15 and living in an upper-middle-class neighborhood of Detroit, Michigan, with her parents and brothers. Her book, The Slave Across the Street, describes how she lived a double life, going to school by day but trapped in sex trafficking at night.
Today, Flores works to expose trafficking and help its victims. She'll give the keynote address at an event in Pewaukee tomorrow evening. Ahead of that, she joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski by phone.
Every story is different, but every story has common themes that run through it. Mine was being just a vulnerable 15-year-old but from a upper-middle-class suburb with two parents. And so you wouldn't imagine that I would be vulnerable to being trafficked. And it's just kind of not what we, in our framework of what we think of as human trafficking in the United States. But I was, because my parents were busy, they weren't at home a lot, weren't really noticing any changes. And I was targeted by a group, and one of the members of this group, or several of them, went to my high school and was groomed by them, made to kind of, fall in love with one of the boys. And he asked me if I wanted to ride home from school one day, and I thought he was going to take me home. But he took me to his home and ended up drugging and raping me. And after that, they had photos, which they used to blackmail me with.
And then you were caught in this vicious cycle of going to school during the day, still trying to keep up with your duties as a student, as a daughter, helping with a family, and yet at night being trapped in this awful cycle. How did that affect you, first off, as a teenager, not even mentally, emotionally fully developed, but how did you find that challenged you emotionally over the long term?
Well, it takes a lifetime to heal from something like that. It's not something that goes away. I mean, it will affect every survivor for the rest of her life. So, I mean, it affects, you get PTSD from it, you get depression from it. Many end up with physical problems as well because it is a very violent situation over and over again.
Your book that you wrote, it's called The Slave Across the Street, The True Story of How an American Teen Survived the World of Human Trafficking. But before this even came out, you first told someone in college, an old boyfriend of yours, what happened to you. But then you mentioned it was nearly 20 years before you could even tell your whole story again. So what inspired you to write this book and then your role now as a speaker to go out in public and talk about your experience to all these groups of people?
Yeah. It was about 12 years ago when I went to a conference on human trafficking and realized that's what was called what had happened to me. And I never knew that. And at the time, we did not have a law against it in Ohio. And I had teenage daughters. And I thought this was crazy that people don't know this. And so I wanted to share my story to show people that it's not just people in other countries or people being locked away in a basement here, it can look like kids from the suburb too. So that's really what motivated me to do it. And over the course of the last 12 years, I've met just woman after woman after woman who say me too. And it's just shocking that we've stayed in silence this whole time. And I think that's where we really need to do a better job raising awareness that this happens in every zip code.
How do survivors' stories often get rejected from listeners, and how has that impacted you personally?
I don't think that they get rejected. I think that people just don't hear them very often. Or they think, well, she was just a prostitute. She wanted to do this. She was just for drugs. But, the fact is that people are buying her, that these men are purchasing young girls for sex, vulnerable women. And that's where that's got to stop, is we need to go after the demand for this. Because there's always going to be vulnerable women and girls out there. But if we can tighten up the demand and say, you know what, in our country, you just can't buy another person, and we're going to go after you if you try to do that, I think that's what it's going to take to change this.
Why do you think it's so hard for Americans to comprehend the topic of sex trafficking? And how do you find people respond to the word slavery? Because I don't think people would connect those two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't consider myself having been a slave. I remember seeing my picture on the news one night and it said former child sex slave. I'm like, really? I just never, even a prostitute. Like, I never have considered myself that I was a prostitute. I was prostituted. You know, men bought me for sex, but I didn't benefit out of that. I didn't get anything out of that. So I think that that's a big reason why America has a hard time grasping this, because of those words and the mindset that we've had all these years on what is prostitution, what is human trafficking. Human trafficking, that happens somewhere else, not here. You know, so really through educating people on what this looks like, and the spans of it is what we need to do. If they think of human trafficking or slavery in the United States, you know, they might have that vision of a girl being chained to a bed in a basement, and that generally doesn't happen. So it's definitely more covert than that.
What do you want to make sure people know about how and why people can stay trapped in trafficking, and how it's not so easy to simply escape? Your book says that people often ask questions after you make a presentation, and they often go to logistics or things that, you know, why didn't you do this per se, and not talking about any of the other circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people can be very quick to blame the victim. You know, well, you should have told your parents, or why didn't you tell the police? And you got to remember, you know, I was 15, I was 16, and you're being blackmailed. You're told your family's going to be killed. So you do what it takes to defend your family. And we really need to do a better job asking those questions. Well, whatever happened to those guys? Like, why didn't they get in trouble? And, you know, who were these men that bought you, you know, at 1 a.m. in some house and knew you were 15? So those are the questions that we need to start asking.
There's a quote in your book that says, quote, survivors seem to be the only people we can tell who will accept the entire story without judgment. We suffer from a deep sense of unworthiness and post-traumatic stress. So I'm curious, over the years and since you decided to share your story, what kind of stories have you heard from other women? And how do you all share your stories of becoming proactive about taking that next step in your self-care to really not just store these memories away, but face them and heal from them?
Right. Well, it's been a really cool thing to see this movement of survivors bonding together, and then even survivors rising up to become leaders in this. So I am quick to tell survivors that not everybody has to write their a book or has to be on a stage and tell their story. I mean, even just trying to be the best mom after something like that happens is a win. We connect through conferences. At the SOAP Project that I run, we have had 4 survivor retreats. And we ask people to apply to come to our retreat because survivors aren't very good about self-care. You know, we really want to take care of others. And a lot of them financially are not able to even, you know, go get a pedicure. And they don't know what good touch is. And, you know, a massage is a really hard thing to do when you've been used. So those are some of the things that we teach them, like it's okay to do something good for yourself and you deserve it. You're worth this. And so our retreats are something that's just really cool. We spend a whole weekend with survivors. We fly them to us for free. And we have sessions on worthiness and identity and boundaries and how to be a good mom. And then we just have fun together because it is right. Most other people don't have any idea what we went through. And it is something that we don't even have to say it to one another because we all know, even if our stories are different.
And I imagine that fulfills you in a different way compared to going out to public events and doing educational work versus connecting with survivors.
Yeah, it's all of it. You know, it's full circle from sharing my story on stage and educating people, and they're like, oh my gosh, to getting people to help me label bars of soap with the hotline number and going out and looking for missing kids that are being trafficked, to pouring into survivors. It's all needed. As we're uncovering this rock of trafficking and what it looks like here, we're finding so many survivors and so many victims out there. And we're not really getting that many services. So it's still lacking in healthcare, knowing about this, free counseling for survivors, job skills, because a lot of times you can't work a 9-to-5, you know, it's just not in your DNA anymore. So it takes all of that.
Well, and you touch upon the services, and part of your work today is meeting with emergency and medical personnel to educate them on what to look for and how to help a trafficking victim. So what are the signs that you teach them? Because often those people are the first point of contact, but perhaps they just get sent back into the same situation.
Yeah, for first responders, you know, I always tell them what might look like a stabbing or an overdose could totally be something different. It could be somebody that is reaching out for help, that somebody did this to her. Some of the signs are, you know, a younger girl that is hanging around a motel, maybe in her pajamas, or checking in on a school day during the day with an older man or even an older woman. So there's so many signs that it'd be hard to go over all of them. But if you get a gut instinct that something just doesn't seem right, it's probably not right. And we just ask people to say something. And who cares if you're wrong? Because you might just have saved that girl's life being right.
What do you think, in addition, needs to be taught to educators and staff in schools? Because, for example, with your trafficking experience, you were going to school during the day and entrapped in sex trafficking at night. And you mentioned how security guards, teachers looked the other way as these boys were clearly intimidating you, whether they knew it was concerning that or not. There was clearly a problem. So what should be done? Because that's a large part of kids' day is with these people.
Yeah. And we still are not really getting out to the teachers and the counselors and school nurses, and even talking to the kids, because they see things. They know what's going on in school. But, you know, is the kids' grades dropping tremendously? Are they missing a lot of school? Are they constantly in the nurse's office? Is her demeanor changing? Is her dress changing? And you've got these older guys that are hanging around her. Maybe she's starting to use drugs. That's hard, because it could look like, oh, this kid's just going through a hard time right now. So it is difficult to say, oh, this for sure is trafficking. But you just have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together and then talk to her, reach out to her, say, hey, you know, I see something going on here. Can I help you?
Back in your experience, that could have been one major step that could have helped you escape that situation. And living through that period of your life by shutting down emotionally, and the resources you were trying to access, you mentioned some therapists weren't quite helpful or didn't know how to tackle that subject. How have you seen resources grow today compared to when you were ready to reach out to people after your experience?
Oh, wow. You know, I do have to admit it's still really lacking in society, but it has gotten better. You know, counselors are getting trained, like trauma training, and they're getting trained in PTSD. There's a wonderful place here in Columbus that does crime and trauma healing, and it's free for counselors, survivors of any kind of crime. So we really need to get better at having places like that available and counselors trained on it. But I do a lot of trainings for ER doctors and nurses, and they're doing a much better job recognizing the signs and then coming up with procedures for their facility on what is it that I can do as a whole, as a hospital, if we see this. So that's the area, the way that we're kind of going into things now.
Part of the equation at times when busting sex trafficking rings or helping survivors is, of course, arresting the offenders and busting these circles. And I'm curious, have you ever looked back into the group in Detroit to pursue any action against them or help any other people that may have been victimized by the same group of people?
Well, I have turned over their names to the Attorney General's office. I did that many years ago. But the statute of limitations is up for me. There was no law against human trafficking back then. Any kind of law, like for rape or, you know, even kidnapping, I think, is probably over. I just, like, this is what my justice looks like, is by educating others, by sharing my story, by pouring into survivors now. And so that's how I've determined I will give back. But I'm even more into going after just the purchaser, because I think that if we can stop the purchaser, then we can stop the supply and demand.
Part of that would also, I imagine, be a big cultural shift in how women are viewed in society. So when men are coming to your event or have questions, how are you, you know, trying to shift their perspective on things?
You know, just even by simply sharing my story, that's starting to plant a seed into them. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. And I encourage them to talk to other men. We have some new T-shirts that we are encouraging men to wear, and they say real men don't buy sex. And if we just started there with that conversation, we could actually change this whole issue.
Right. And, you know, just one example of this once in a while being in the public spotlight is often around the Super Bowl. Outside of these events that are in the news for a bit, how do we keep the attention on this issue when it's affecting so many people in every city?
Yeah, well, media has to get better on that. This is the second leading crime in the United States. Why is it that we're not hearing this every single day on the news? We hear about drug trafficking and border problems and things like that. But if this is the second leading crime right here, then it should be on the nightly news. It should be in the newspaper every day. So I think that media could really help with that a lot.
In your book, you have, quote, "Naively, I still believe people were good. I didn't want to stop believing that, though it was not a belief that was benefiting me." So today, as you've lived your adult life as a parent, as a social worker, and a public speaker, you know, how has your perspective on people changed, or has it stayed the same?
I still believe good in people. I just, I guess that's in my DNA, but I'm not naive anymore. I guess that's the difference. And I'm driven. I have a passion, a mission to change this. So, that's kind of the way it is now.
And how do you continue your self-care today when you go in front of audiences and share one of the darkest periods of your life time and time again?
Well, I did that yesterday to about 150 people. I shared my story, and then I went back to the airport and had a pedicure and a glass of wine. So that's like my self-care. And then just being around my family, that helps. I do get massages every month, so I do practice what I preach.
Well, Teresa Flores, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with me today and, of course, for the work that you continue to do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for getting this message out there.
Teresa Flores is a sex trafficking survivor, advocate, and founder of Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution. She's the author of The Slave Across the Street, the true story of how an American teen survived the world of human trafficking.
Flores is the keynote speaker for the event Sex Trafficking in Our Communities, held at St. Anthony on the Lake Catholic Church in Pewaukee. Tomorrow. The event will also include a panel discussion, and you can learn more about it and about Flores at WUWM.com.